Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio, broadcasting on 860 AM radio, which is in the Philadelphia and the tri-state area. And you can also listen in on the internet to the broadcast, and we have great links on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. Just click on the Listen Live Wednesday link. Also, you can listen to our rebroadcast anytime simply by going to the same site, AmericanWorkersRadio.com. Well, I am here with three very distinguished gentlemen. Number one is Larkin Connolly. And Larkin is a man of many, many, many things going on in his life. And he is sitting here ready, willing, and able to go wild. Today, our subject is going to be somewhat directed toward education. And I need Rich and Mark and Larkin to really join in on this subject. Also with us is Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration, and Mark Andel, the founder of the Made in America store. Well, guys, last week we talked about a special theme for 2015, Grow America's Economy. Today I'd like to ask all of you if you would chime in on education, because very soon all of the school boards will be finalizing their curriculums and their budgets for next year's start of education, which is already going to be approved the end of June. Starting July, they go into some new things. And if they can't get everything in this year, we're going to talk about ways to get it in on next year's budget and some of the important things that could be accomplished. I just want to mention before I start off that in the last month or so, as I've been speaking with some regular teachers who are in the system at this time and a few people that are retired, especially those that are working in junior high and high school, they all tell me, well, Michael, I enjoy your broadcasts. I enjoy hearing about Mark Andel and his welding business. And we had great vocational shops where I taught for 25 years. And if we don't get those vocational education programs back real soon, known as the trades, and also the industrial arts programs back soon, America's going to go, you know, further into difficult situations. Now, some people say the trades. Michael, exactly what do you mean when you say the trades? Well, the trades represent lifelong skills, skills like plumbing, heating and air conditioning, electrical contracting, cooking, automotive training. That's just to name a few. Industrial arts programs reflect engineering, drafting, designing clothing, furniture, appliances, and of course, welding. And Mark Andel, he's a perfect example of what can and should be done with industrial arts programs in schools across the USA. But not enough of the parents and also the school administrators have been talking up about it. Today, I would like to begin with the man who has a good idea about a welding business, and that is Mark Andel. Mark, what do you think we can do to change the reality in our schools?
How you doing, guys? Mike, great question, great theme today. Again, as you know, I'm living this situation, this challenge for us all. You know, in schools, as you know, last year I went from 31 employees to just about 70 between the Made in America and General Welding, which is incredible growth. But our biggest problem was finding skilled workers, and there was a lot of things associated. You know, we talk about drive and ambition and just work ethic. But I think it all ties together. Like you said, there's welders, electricians, plumbers, HVAC guys. It's a shortage when I talk to people in all industries. And again, remember, I talked to, if it's Channel Lock or if it's Wigwam, 300 employees each. The average age there is now 60 to 62. When I started Made in America 4 or 5 years ago, it was 56, 58. major problem coming up, like you said, Mike. This is so big, it's going to be so talked about. Even the next presidential election, this should be the number one issue, is this school, what we need in the schools. And I always said it goes back to teachers, counselors, but also parents. And I think lately I see parents, they've got to accept that everybody isn't made for college, and they've got to make it okay for their son or daughter to go into these fields, Mike. And, you know, we got to make that okay at a younger age so they can learn. But again, with our schools, what they need to do is adjust and get our metal shops, wood shops, and get these kids exposed to these, you know, what's available, and be realistic. What do businesses need out there? And it's skilled workers. It's technicians right now. I started my own school last year. Then we went a little further. So we're training our own people, and it's working. But it's a slow process, and right now I'm looking for more. So I think these schools, you know, parents have to accept, hey, that's what's out there. They can make good money. Rich, the article you sent us, you know, of course you knew that'd be right close to my heart. Outstanding. That young gentleman's making 120-plus. But he's working. You know, if you read in the details, he's working 7 days a week, but he's got work ethic, and God bless him, because he's going to be something.
And, Mark, you're right. And, you know, he's working like that because there are not enough of him able to do that job. And for a young guy, I don't know exactly how old he was. Was he 22 or 23 years old? Well, God bless him. If he's able to make $140,000 a year working a lot of overtime, the fact that he's in demand, and so many people walking around with the sheepskin are not in demand, is a concern that every educator should have first hand. Larkin, what would you say to that?
Well, I think I truly do think education is one of the biggest problems that we face in this country. And from a score perspective, I read an article last week that I want to share with the audience and with Rich and Mark, only after I've read it and really get a perfect understanding of what the fellow was saying. But essentially, what he was saying is that the data on startups in the United States has not been regularly compiled until 2008, that when the U.S. Census Bureau created the business dynamic statistics. And what he is essentially saying in his article, which is in Foreign Policy, Foreign Affairs magazine, is that in 1978, startups defined in the database as companies less than a year old accounted for nearly 15% of all U.S. firms. In 2011, that number slipped to 8%. Without getting into serious detail, startups in this country are down. They're down considerably, and there are a variety of reasons for that, and a variety of things that have to be addressed in order to correct it. Immigration is one of the things. Healthcare is the other thing. But the final one, to me, the most important and widespread one, is education. We do not have job-ready skill sets in the youth of America today. But the sad part of it is that if we have made a trade to make our the youth of America wiser and smarter and more relevant with history and English and math, we've failed. We failed. We're 36th in science in the world. We're 24th in math. I mean, they're egregious. They're offensive numbers. So if the point of the education was to create a smarter, more innovative youth in this country, we failed at it miserably. In Philadelphia, we don't graduate 43% of the people, the kids that start high school. So these kids are coming out of school. If it is in fact just raw education, reading, writing, and arithmetic that we're trying to teach them, we're not doing a very good job of it.
You're right.
And we've let the job-ready skills just absolutely go to the side. And I heard a story this morning where one of the teachers wanted to take recess away in order for the children to study, do specific studying for tests that indicate whether or not they're learning. You got to be kidding me. I mean, it's a mess. Education in this country is a mess. It's a terrible mess. It's irrelevant in high school. It's irrelevant in college. We have kids going to college, learning, you know, for 4 years, assuming, you know, debt of between $40,000 and $100,000 in order to graduate. There are no jobs out there because, quite frankly, they're not relevantly educated to take a job. So, you know, it's a mess. It needs to be addressed up and down the line. Paying $2.5 million to a college president is absurd. Paying $1.2 million to a history professor because he's one of the brightest history professors in the country is ridiculous.
And, you know, Larkin, many of the people who listen to us and also talk to me in my travels say, why aren't the issues that we discussed in the mass media on a regular basis? Like, there's nobody out there pushing why are we paying a college professor that's not producing children that are job ready? Well, why are we doing that?
Because it doesn't sell newspapers. It doesn't sell television space.
I think there's one word, guys, too: entitlement. You know, when I look at my top best employees at General Welding, and Larkin, you've met the Sioux, and they're not entitled. You know, we have determination, we have a can-do spirit, and we're problem solvers. We don't look for somebody to solve our problems. We solve them. And that's a huge part of this whole mess.
Very well said. Rich, you've heard what we've been discussing now. You've been around. You've been a reporter for a newspaper. What would you like to add in there? And then I'm going to ask you a question.
Sure. Good morning, guys. And just real quick, Michael, and good morning to our listeners. The young welder, Justin Friend, when I saw his story, I immediately thought, we've got to get him on air. And I want you guys to know he's committed to coming on air. And he's going to talk about his story without a college degree, with a trade school degree, and what he's doing as a 24-year-old guy who's working his butt off.
Would he move to Buffalo, Rich?
What's that?
Would he move to Buffalo?
You know what, Mark? I tell you, it crossed my mind. My commission fee for headhunting is very small, by the way. I have an American Workers Radio discount. So lots of zeros and no number 1 through 9 prefaced by it, Mark. And I thought about that, you know, not semi-jokingly. Michael, so we're going to get him on air. And also as a preview for listeners, guys, we've got Scott Paul from the Alliance for American Manufacturing. He's coming on next month. He's going to give us his 2014 manufacturing report card. So really some great guests coming up in the near future. Michael, this issue, education, is one that is very near and dear to me. I consider myself as pro-education a person as you will meet. But I really think this issue, this system, this system in place nationally, what we're seeing right now is the end result of basically non-innovative, homogenized, status quo thinking and approach to education. It's the approach that we have seen throughout the years, and I covered education as a reporter. I was looking at it truly from the inside, not from just an outside spectator, but from the inside. And what I saw was many, many well-intended educators, but they always had this Sisyphean feat. If you think about the old myth of Sisyphus pushing the rock up the hill and it keeps falling down, they always had this Sisyphean feat of trying to overcome regulations, standards, and administrators, some of whom were as paid as much as the President of the United States. And the approach to it all, guys, that I saw, and I have no doubt it's this way nationally throughout many school districts, was a approach going to education that basically was it was just like a cattle call. It was get people in and get them out. Get students in, get them taking a test, get them out. And teachers and educators, their voice was most of the time shut out. And I really think that's sad, guys, because if you look at any – Mark, you look at your company, okay? You're running the company. Your responsibility is to your employees. But the guys really doing the work, aside from you, are the actual workers. And those workers know what's best in terms of the technology you need, the workflow, right? They know that. They
Absolutely.
Know what's best because they're the one doing the work. And unfortunately, Michael – teachers have experienced a situation where their voices have been drowned out.
And you're right, Rich.
This is what we've seen, and this is exactly what we're witnessing today, an education system that we refuse to think innovatively about. We just want to keep the status quo. We don't want to rock the boat in any way. We just want students in, students out. And then when students aren't graduating or they're failing at a rapid clip, we want to pull out every excuse in the book, none of which does anything to help a kid graduate at all. And this is where we're at, Michael, with this issue. And I agree, Larkin, with you. I view education like healthcare in this country. Instead of Band-Aids and instead of chicken-you-know-what legislation, we need to blow it up and we need to rebuild it. And damn it, Michael, if there's anywhere in the world that we could blow something up and rebuild it, it's right here in America.
You know, in England, individuals, the youth of England don't go on to college unless they are pursuing a chemistry degree, a doctorate, a doctor of medicine, a lawyer. If they're going to become a professional, a licensed professional in accounting, there are myriad different vocations that they can pursue. But this idea of getting a general education because you're college prepared is to me just complete insanity. And it's gotten to a point now that colleges need headcounts. They need enrollment up. They need to generate that kind. So it's become a race to see who can pay professors higher, so that they can talk about a more relevant and capture a more famous or infamous, as it may be, faculty. It's just,
Larkin, it became a business.
It did.
Making money, no matter what the product looks like at the end, as long as they all fill their pockets. And like you said, with England, Germany is the same exact way. Everybody don't go to college. You only the top cream of the crop that need that, like you said, the chemists, the physics, and otherwise they're working with their hands. They have aptitude tests for that.
And those colleges aren't for-profit corporations or for-profit companies. They're not for-profit. They're 501c3, could be any one of a myriad of tax treatments. But, they generate all of this money through their paying for. I think everybody remembers the famous question I asked, who is the highest paid state employee in every state of the union except one? The highest paid employee in every state in the union except
always
one.
Always sports.
It's the head football coach of every major state university. And it's not the case in Massachusetts, because there it's the head hockey coach. So, it's just gotten out of hand. They all want to go to bowl games for the money and for the prestige and to make recruiting better so that they can have a better team. It's not a sport anymore. It's a business. And they're paying people like Urban Meyer who single-handedly whooped. He handed Oregon something they didn't expect. So you got to hand it to him as being really a great coach. That's his third national title, two different universities. But come on, guys. He's an educator, or he's supposed to be. He's supposed to be on the staff of a university as an educator. And he talks about it as much as his Paterno used to, his graduation rate and study halls and all the rest of that stuff. But listen, the net bottom line is college and universities have turned into a business. And instead of declaring a profit, they pay everybody on the payroll a lot of money.
A lot of money. Mark, as you were going out and looking for the young people to come to your shop to work, did you go to any of the administrators in the school and say, wouldn't it be good if we increase the vocational arts programs, the trades? Did you do that, and what was the response?
Yeah, we did. We've got a local programs that we've talked before about BOCES in our area, I think Larkin and Rich. And, so I work both with, we got a BOCES 1, BOCES 2, south and north, and I work with them, and in the spring we get students that have an interest, so I run the students through. The program's not great because they want me to take 15 kids in the same week, so we try to break it up. And then I've also met with East Aurora School District close to us, which is a public school, and a couple of the teachers there have been on this a long time. They're tiring. It's tiring. You can't even mention industrial arts, that name, that word. They've been fighting the fight trying to educate And I think, Rich, you hit it on head. They're not listening to teachers. They got their own plan, but the teachers are trying. They're turning red in the face. Wait, listen, this is what we know we need, our businesses need. And then lately I've been working, Mike, with Alfred State College, Technical College. They offer a two-year degree for welding, which is outstanding. So I actually gathered five people within a 20-mile radius, five kids that are going in a welding field. I just took two of them. They're still on their break now. They had about a six-week break with Christmas. So two of them came, and they're working part-time here. We got to know each other, and then they'll go back to college for, you know, the rest of this semester, and then they'll finish in the summer. They'll come back to me. But out of the four or five kids, I'm hoping to land four or five, but it's great. But it'll take me 2-3 years to get a startup employee. And you can see the time that this has taken, 2-3 years. These are kids that are working now, and the problem is these schools don't adjust. We're talking 5, 10, 15 years. We can't wait that time.
We don't have the time.
You know, Mark, I think you understand it. And people are just still talking about it. And these people that I met with, like you said, we're meeting. We got nice group meetings. But it doesn't go that far because you're hitting a wall. Nobody's grabbing a hold of what's going on.
One of the things I want to ask you, too, Mark, before I ask another question is, what percentage of the school students in your area are just going for academics, and what percentage of the school kids are going for vocational and industrial arts types programs?
You know, you do have the bowl season. They can go in a high school now. You can go for 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th. I would honestly say, you know, sadly, probably 95% are not going for technical. It's changing. They're becoming more aware. But out of my boys' class, Jake and Zach, my twins, graduated 2 years ago now, there was 250 students. Out of them students, just a handful are talking about tech. I mean, five out of their group of 50 friends, you know, to give you an idea. That's just, it's sad, but they were never exposed to it. We talked a while ago, you've got to walk these students through 6th, 7th, 8th grade. I just, at General Welding, my company, and Larkin, you've been here, we can show them welding, we can show them wiring, we can show them plumbing, hydraulics, CAD. So just to get some exposure, and if they said, hey, that's cool over there, I'd like to learn about that, you get their interest. Again, we talked about their passion, and then they can, you know, follow that up. But they don't get exposed to it until 12th grade or later. So they're really not learning, and they're going to school for something that don't even exist when they get out. So the planning has to be, you know, identified. And people got to get a better understanding of what we need out here as businesses.
Now, I'm going to add something to that, which I'm going to then ask Larkin and Rich to say something too. The school teachers that I've been talking with lately, it's why I'm on this subject, because they're saying to me, Michael, this is the time of year that the budgets are really being got together, and the school boards meet more often than they do at other times. One of the things is that the teachers, just as you said, Mark, the teachers could be promoting vocational arts, but nobody in administration wants to hear it. Administrators, people on the school boards, many of them are the uppity-up types, and they don't want to hear about programs that they really don't know much about or feel comfortable supporting. This is a problem that's going to have to be addressed by, number one, the parents. Parents are going to have to go and storm the school boards and tell them, we want change, we want industrial arts reinstated, we want to see how many children are going to sign up and move forward. But this is also something that businesses have to do. When businesses tell me, we can't come back to America, Mr. Blihash, because there's not enough skilled workers. That's very hard for me to hear. But after speaking with you, Mark, and these school teachers, it's a fact. We don't have enough young people going into the skills that are needed. So how can we shake the wagon right now and get these leaders in Washington and in state capitals moving our dollars into areas we want them used?
You know, I kind of agreed with President Obama's announcement the other day about maintaining a C-plus average and somehow the government, local, state, federal, would pick up the load of junior college. But they would only do it for 2 years, which cracked me up because it indicates to me that Washington has no idea that most junior colleges only are 2 years.
Right.
That just killed me when he said that. I thought, is he proposing year four and year or three and four for junior colleges? That they only have 2 years. But at any rate, the idea, the concept is really pretty solid. I think it needs to be refined. And I think junior colleges need to pick up now where the college, where general colleges and universities refuse to pick up, and that is in the trades. Here locally at CCP, Community College of Philadelphia, you can get a culinary degree. There are a lot of different technical type degrees that CCP has available. What we have to do is just make them more readily available. We have to take that insult out of, you know, what did you do when you graduated from college? Well, I went to a junior college. Well, oh, really? Well, that's too bad. Hello? That's, you know, it can be a great education.
You know,
they have to go for the right thing. If you pictured a cartoon with all these kids coming out of college and their heads down on the right side because they went for criminal law and all the things we don't need any more of, and then the left side would be welders, workers, plumbers, they'd be sweating and skinny because there's not enough of them. You know, there's... We have to make sure they go to college for the right reason, to not just give them college. You know, they have to answer what the businesses need and what the economy needs at that time.
You just can't, you can't allow your children to think that there's something, you know, deficient about learning how to work right with your hands, about being a carpenter, who to me, most carpenters, when they're good, are absolute artists. And plumbers and electricians and bricklayers, I mean, these are all very honorable vocations. And for the life of me, I don't understand why, you know, the American father hangs his head in shame. My son's going to be a bricklayer. Wow. Hello.
He's going to be well employed. You know, as I'm listening to everyone today, I think that it's really something that we're going to have to push big time, because every student should graduate with at least one career opportunity in addition to the academic diploma. They should know where they want to go. The fact that the Community College of Philadelphia has to start from scratch with a lot of these programs, and they do great work, those boys and girls should be going into the community college to clarify, to get better, excel at what they learned in junior high school and in high school, not start a new life of becoming a whatever they're doing there. They're doing all the culinary arts and design and things like that. Why aren't we designing clothing in this country? Why aren't we designing furniture in this country? Why have we outsourced all of that around the world when our schools are filled with young people that could do those jobs?
Well, Michael, I'm kind of laughing at what you're talking about with the community college idea, which I'm in agreement with you on this. On the surface, initially, I was excited about the idea of this, although I like to correct people when they, not that you said this, but I'm saying the way that it's been referred to as free. There's no such thing as free, but when it's, if taxes are funding and going to the right things educationally, I believe the majority of the country will get behind that, because I think the majority of the country is a lot closer together on strong education than we are farther apart. And Michael, this is the thing about we're going to bring it back to jobs. You can do the same as education. If you ask lawmakers in the highest levels, why did jobs go overseas? Why is education the way it is? And listen to their answers. Oftentimes what you're going to hear is they don't know why these things occurred. And that's very problematic, because if you're not going to solve education by good luck. You're not going to solve outsourcing and inversions and getting jobs back by good luck. You're going to start with, why the hell did all of this happen, and then work from there. And I got to tell you guys, I hear, I watch, and I listen to a lot of the politicians talk about this stuff. And if they know what's going on, I got to tell you, they're keeping it a secret, because publicly, they just don't really seem to understand why these things occur the way they do. And I really think part of it, Michael, is because when we talk a lot about, and I bring this up often in conversation, we talk a lot about elected officials. We have to remember that elected officials bring with them, as trusted advisors and counselors, people who generally kind of think the way they do. So all they're around are basically yes men and women, and the occasional one who might challenge, it's not really there, Michael. That's why you hear these answers come out about education, jobs, even healthcare. And what you hear is a lot of the same old, same old.
So how
worded a little differently.
So how about this, Rich? And Mark especially, you'll like this. And this is kind of a takeoff of the English, the British education system. At age 16, which would, by my understanding, be a freshman or sophomore year in high school, students sit down with guidance counselors, and they talk about their future. And if in fact they have the aptitude and the stick-to-itiveness and the desire to be a medical doctor, then you know what, they go on in their formal education. If in fact they're suited for and want to work with their hands and develop a trade, at that point they leave school and join a company as an apprentice, and they learn that skill from the ground up, taught to them by a for-profit company who eventually is going to hire them and who might share in the costs of the apprenticeship program while the government pitches in a little bit of extra money on their own. So now they're getting a relevant education, something that gives them a skill that is marketable in all 50 states of the country. Mark, I think that is brilliant.
Yes. You know, and they're giving the student the choice. The parents must be, obviously are going ahead with this. This is accepted. And the student gets to go to a business that's a top business and already has got a life, a livelihood created for him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I would only like to add one thing to that, Lark, and I think that should begin at seventh grade. You should start already at seventh grade by making sure everybody has an idea. You know, some people may already have something in mind. I'd like this or that. Maybe those boys and girls should be given a tour of some businesses. I know, Mark, you mentioned once before that you did tour some young people at your business.
Yes.
To let them see if they would like to do it. I think we should do more of that. I'm bringing this up today also because in the swearing-in ceremony in Washington a couple weeks ago, every possible elected official talked about jobs. After the swearing-in ceremony is done, I haven't heard another word about it. They sounded good on the inaugural day events, but I have not heard another word. And I really think that it's time for a new direction in America's schools, and it's going to be up to the people, mothers and fathers that see their children in debt because they did not have proper guidance in high school, in junior high school. Now their kids have a great sheepskin, but it's taking them nowhere. They have no possible second choice. They have to go to community college to start a new life of doing something.
Or they sat through a rah-rah, sis-boom-bah speech from a recruiter from rah-rah, sis-boom-bah university who said to them, come on and come to our university. We have a great football team. We have a great basketball team. We've got fraternities and sororities. You're going to grow socially, and you're also going to get an academic, you're going to get academic exposure because there's no guarantee that you're going to get an education.
Gentlemen, I have to say a few moments, and I'm going to go right back to you, Mark. I have to say thank you. And because we are on 7 days a week, we do acknowledge our supporters every day in some way. Today, I'm going to do a brief thank you to the people who are helping us make our broadcast today. And they also join me in saying thank you for supporting American Made. We're trying very hard to restore the 50-50 balance of everything that is sold in America being made in America. If that happens, boy, we are really in good shape. But our thanks begin today with Leon Munkowski, attorney at law. He thanks you for supporting American Made. Also, everyone from Serena's Auto Body Shop and the Net Cost Market of Philadelphia. Also, everyone from the PRCUA, Mr. Joseph Drobot, president, and Mr. Michael Steinman, attorney at law, says thank you for supporting American Made. And best wishes also from everyone from Phil's Hairstyling in Philadelphia, as well as from Dr. Eva Marchak. And also joining us today is our friends from the Sugar House Casino, and they're located at 1001 North Delaware Avenue in Philadelphia. Check them out on the internet at sugarhousecasino.com. Greetings as well from the Polish and Slavic Federal Credit Union, and also from Dominik Rostocki, attorney at law. And when you're in the Port Richmond area, remember Polka Deli, 2719 East Allegheny Avenue. And if you're planning to do some travel, Polish American Travel Service welcomes you to contact them. And when you're in your supermarket, always look for the name Giorgio Foods, a symbol of quality since 1928. And Mr. Martin Bednarek, the president of Washington Savings Bank, thanks you for supporting American Made, as does Yolanda Konopacka de Scipio, attorney at law, and Dr. Wojciech Zin of Everest Dental. Greetings also to all from Mr. Frank Spula, national president of the Polish National Alliance, known as the PNA. And I would also give you best wishes from the Royal Cracovia Restaurant, located at 510 White Horse Pike South in Magnolia, New Jersey. Check them out at royalcracovia.com. Also, I would like to ask that you kindly look at all of the links on the front page of American Workers Radio, especially the U.S. Debt Clock. There's also a link to Made in America Store and for AmeriLoop and Go for USA with Mike Sessions. And I'm hoping that we're going to hear about a toaster somewhere, because we're having soup again. Larkin's looking forward to our soup. Wednesday is soup day here at the center. So we're going to have some great soup. But do check out. Maybe Mike Sessions and Go for USA will be able to find me a toaster that's not going to cost us a fortune. Because, Mike, we don't have a toaster here at the Cultural Center. And Mark, this is a project we're hoping you and Larkin and Rich and all can come up with some ideas for. And also, Mark Andel is an unbelievable supporter of Made in America. I encourage you to visit his store, Made in America Store, by going to madeinamericastore.com. Help those who help us. I also want to thank the people who sponsor our broadcast 7 days a week here on 860 AM. Your support for all that we do is very much appreciated. Kindly continue to spread the word. Well, getting back to our subject today, we're talking about a new direction for our schools by contacting local school boards and all of your elected officials. Nothing gets me more angered is when people say to me, no one is speaking up that we should restore this or that kind of program in the store. People, please don't feel that you're being a pain in the neck. Call, because it is your tax dollars that is being used to support and educate America's young people. Yes, Mr. Larkin.
Well, I just happened to run into a statistic, and this is my quiz of the day for Mark and Rich. So listen very carefully, Mark and Rich. What is the percentage of high school students who ultimately graduate from high school nationwide? Mark, I'll let you go first.
I'll take a shot. I think it's lower than we think. I'd say 50%.
Okay. Rich?
Percentage nationally?
Yes.
I'm scared to hear, Larkin, but I'll get a little different. How about in the low 60s? Low 60%.
Okay. Michael, you might as well jump in here.
I would say nationwide 70%.
Well, Michael is the winner. It's 72.7%. But what that means is that 28% of our high school students, or supposed high school students, are walking around totally disenfranchised.
Larkin, do you know what it is in Buffalo?
I know what it is, and you've heard me say in Philadelphia, it's 43, 42.
Yeah, 40. We're right there.
Are you really? 43?
Yeah. Oh. Honestly, last year was 43.
Wow.
Now, Mark, would you say that could be possibly because many of the boys and girls haven't really had career opportunities?
Yeah, I think they could be better placed. Buffalo school system is the number one talk on the news every night, just about serious problems, you know. But, yeah, I think it would definitely, you could place the children better and give them opportunity. I don't think they're exposed at all to what's out there today. So it needs a total revamping. But 43%, when I heard that, it's incredible to me. Can't even fathom that.
Okay, right?
But Mark and Larkin, again, I'm gonna say this, okay? If you sat down with the school's chancellor, superintendent, not to place blame, just to ask a question, why do you think the graduation rate is so low? In your opinion, what are the answers that you guys would get?
Well,
what are the answers that would be given? I'm interested to know that.
The one you're going to get in Philadelphia. And that, quite frankly, I agree with, is kind of the collapse of the family. The family unit is just it's just such a foreign body in this city. It's not even funny.
And what is the second reason?
I think it's misdirected administration and misdirected teachers that don't understand what a relevant education is.
Normally, it would be we need more money.
Well, they all complain about money.
If we had money, we would restore those trade programs.
Michael, if that dish, I know I'm going to say this, it's conjecture, but I'd be proven right. You give that district unlimited money, you still have the same problems, Larkin. I'm telling you, you'd still have the same problems.
You can't throw money at it.
No question. No question you would still have. So let me take this a little step further, just so we can get a grip on the number of disenfranchised youth. Now, of all those 72.7% of youth, or as they say in the movie, youths, of the youth that go on to college, how many of them graduate? What's the percentage of students? And I'm even going to give you a bonus here. What are the percentage of students that graduate with a college degree in 6 years? In the old famous six-year program, Michael?
Let's say 70%.
Okay.
Larkin? Larkin's asking Rich.
Rich?
I'd say in the high 50s, Larkin.
Okay. Mark?
Yeah, I was going to say around 60.
That's right.
I know the first year of college is very, very tough.
it's right at 50%.
Yeah.
So 50% of 72% sounds like 36% to me. That's 36% of the students who get an education in high school, get an education in college, and are standing out in the street with both diplomas in their hand looking for a job. What happened to the other?
And Larkin, working in social services, I can tell you that is a very big fact of life. Many wonderful, quality people call looking for employment opportunities, and in their field, I'm sorry to say, if they said I'm looking to be looking for a carpentry job or HVAC or something, I got tons of people calling for that skill level, but I don't have people asking for paralegals or something else.
Why would I hire an English major from the University of Pennsylvania who could tell me that Barbara Fritchie was a poet? What do I care about Barbara Fritchie? I mean, we all want to be educated. I'm not calling for an uneducated society. All I'm saying is, can we deliver a relevant product?
Right. And, well, you know, in order to get to that 50-50 balance in America, we need those industries restored. So educating the young people today, as Mark said earlier, if he doesn't get more people available, there's not going to be anybody to replace any of the people in industries operating today. If they're 58, 60, 65, there's not going to be any time frame. Industry doesn't stop. The clock doesn't stop waiting for students to become involved in the programs. We have to involve them right now. Those teachers tell me they spoke 25 years ago and everything was the administration knows best. They spoke 25 years ago, and the school board knows best. And here we are today, 25 years later, and the school programs are been closed down and have no possibility of opening up unless the American people who pay the taxes speak up.
And Larkin, what you said about England with these apprenticeship programs are beautiful for the Chaniloc, the Wigwam. You're going to allow a kid, he's got an interest, you're going to bring him in your business, you're going to teach him that trade, you're going to teach him that specific trade, how to thread and take care of these sock-making machines and, you know, at Chaniloc, the tooling and to run mills. And a lot of it's CNC now. So that apprenticeship program is beautiful.
Yeah. And they start earning money at 16. Listen, I know a lot of 16-year-old kids. I've had three of my own and two that I helped raise. I know 16-year-olds. I know 18-year-olds. I know 24-year-olds. I'm telling you, at 16, they're ready to enter the workplace.
Now, another thing is they're making money instead of creating debt.
Exactly.
On their loan.
Exactly. And
for their school.
And the thing is, you know, even you can even do a bastardized version of it by saying, okay, here's the deal. At 16, your sophomore year, you are going to come to class from 9 in the morning to 11 in the to 11 in the morning. You're going to get an hour or maybe even 2 hours to eat lunch and do whatever else you have to do, and you're going to report to apprenticeship at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and you're going to work till 5 or 4 o'clock.
Good point.
Love it.
It's like a, you know, guys, Michael, you're bringing up the debt. You guys are bringing the debt up. It's truly like a bad dream. It's like you go through a homogenized educational system, get ready for a test. You don't know if you're coming or going. You get steered to college, and you graduate with lifelong debt, which, by the way, I've already cited about our debt, how there are only two companies in the world that earn more money than the federal government does on profit from student debt. But I'll tell you guys something else. You look at the student debt right now, and there are some eerily mirrored symptoms between our student debt and the 08 mortgage fiasco. And it's pretty scary.
Yeah, because they were not only in debt, and they were removed from the mortgage market as a result of that. The mortgage company said, well, then, okay, let's create a new mortgage market. People who can't afford a house but want it.
Yeah, my heart skips a beat, I'll tell you, when I see the new data on student loan debt statistics and the figures. And Michael, you just brought up a point that I wanted to reiterate as well about knowing better. It's like all I encountered was administrators who thought, well, we're paid all these BUCO bucks, we know better. And there was a time probably when teachers, for the most part, acquiesced to administrators, superintendents, but I think, it's my perception, guys, but I think that the average teacher now, maybe even in some of those poorly performing districts, are speaking up more. It's my sense that they're doing that, and it's not true anymore, Michael. The average educator and superintendent doesn't always know better. And a good 50-cent word for our listeners, since we're talking education, it cost me a lot of money to learn this word. They have to look up the word supercilious and find out and look up what that word means, and that's going to be your perfect fit for the average educators. And guys, look, I'm not saying that all teachers get it right and all administrators get it wrong. That's not true. It's not fair to put a blanket generalization. But I know this. I'm not sure, Larkin, if what you're saying about getting kids young in a trade school would work, or what I would say, or Mark, Michael, what you guys. Ultimately, we're not really sure if it would work, right? No one really knows if it'll work. But I can tell you this. We know what's not working, and we have plenty and plenty of years of data. I mean, when you have a sample size of 3-4 decades of looking at something and asking yourself, does it work or not? Well, you're going to know after 3 or 4 decades if something's working or not. I mean, you're going to know. And I think now we're looking at it, and the general consensus with education is that it's like me in America. It's hard to think that the concept of quality education has escaped us, but to a large degree it has, because it's just all about the money and about the business. And I think people now are starting to realize education, like me in America.
And
made in America? Yeah, this is important.
And yesterday, or this week, it was either Monday or Tuesday, the fifth individual in the Philadelphia school system, a principal who had left Philadelphia School District and gone somewhere else, but was brought back and convicted of teaching the teachers in her school how to cheat on the tests that were being turned in for the competency tests that were being turned into the state, which were attached to funding, I guess. I don't know exactly what it was attached to. Some of it should be attached to tenure, but, you know, the unions won't stand for that, you know. So, I don't know. You know, I had three children. They are all three educated, all have a college degree. One has an advanced degree. Two of my three children, and all three of my children are doing well. None of them, thank goodness, come back to the, you know, to the United Bank of Conway looking for money or housing or anything. They're all doing, they're married and very happy at what they do and very successful. Two of the three did not have to spend that money on college. They didn't. They're not using it today at all. My daughter is using her advanced degree. But my two sons did not need that education.
Very interesting.
They didn't.
Now, Larkin, good point. Would your son, when he was in high school, would he want to go back and do what he's doing now? Would he like to have had that in high school presented to him?
One of my sons is in the restaurant business, and he loves it.
He could have had the culinary arts presented to him.
But listen, he's been in it for... Geez, John's been in it for 6 years. He's now general manager of two restaurants. He's doing really, really, really well up in New York and Brooklyn. They're very successful restaurants. He adores the business. They sent him to France to buy wine for the next full year. I mean, he's really got the world by the short hair, and he loves what he does. Would a culinary degree help? It probably would have made it a little bit easier for him to understand the chefs that he has to try to control and the sous chefs and how they play a part in the ultimate operation of the house. But, you know, he didn't need the education he got at Virginia Commonwealth. He didn't need it. And he's got a college degree, and I know he's proud of it because it is an accomplishment, and I think that's fine. My other son's in retail. There's absolutely nothing in high school or college that even, you know, to a college professor, retail is what you do to a squirrel after you've shot it in the ass. You retail it. You know, that's as close as they get to retail. They have no idea what retail is. They're not even in courses available in most colleges and universities. And yet retail is such a phenomenal percentage of our economy. It's not even funny.
Yeah, very, very tough. And, guys, my daughter's 12, and she's in seventh grade. So perfect time. And Jessie knows, you know, she's my boss. I kid everybody, but she's learned everything. But what she gets exposed to, people don't realize seventh and eighth grade, the change that goes on. I mean, number of the years you want to grab their attention. And then my twins are 19. You know, they're both, Jake's in his second year of college, and you know, Jake and Zach are both working at the stores and kind of learning, seeing what they want to do in life. But like you said, Larkin, I mean, hopefully they make the right decisions. We expose them, and as parents, you know, they make the right choices in life. I think these people in high places, you know, managers and Rich, you know, and Larkin, Mike, I mean, all people ain't made to be managers. All people ain't leaders. And I think a lot of our people in high spots, even in schools or in politics, aren't leaders, and they can't make change. They can't, number one, identify what the issue is. Rich, like you said, they don't even have a clue. And then they're trying, they don't know how to make change. And it's baby steps, you know. You eat an elephant one bite at a time. But you got to have change going on.
You know, it's funny. You can talk to anybody from corporate America and talk about the late 70s and most of the lion's share of the 80s. It became very, very popular to hire MBAs from Wharton and from Harvard and from Chicago and Stanford to get one of those MBAs and put him in your organization at a high level and just watch him go. And we did that at Gulf Oil where I was. I've talked to people from Exxon and Texaco and United States Steel. Every corporation did it in the late 70s and early 80s. They just forced these people in, and guess what? None of them are still there. After about 4 or 5 years, you found out how fraudulent they were with their knowledge of the industry, and it wasn't their fault.
No experience.
It wasn't their fault. We had people in the Gulf Oil system that didn't even know what a gasoline dispenser was. You know, it was crazy. It was a crazy, crazy experiment, and the country never learned from that, unfortunately.
Larkin, I just took a note. I think you said Stanford, Harvard, and Wharton.
University of Chicago.
Yeah, and Chicago. I didn't go to any of those schools.
Do you know what? I've never been on any one of those campuses. No, that's not true. I've been on Wharton's campus. I apologize.
Gentlemen, I hate to tell you, but it's that time. But I want to ask you, because the importance of this subject, I'm going to ask all of you if you would take a little time this week to look at some ideas that you would like to propose to the administrators of the schools, to business leaders, and also to parents and taxpayers. Maybe we're going to continue on this week, because these next few weeks are when the school boards are doing their jobs. Larkin, you had some good things there today with those questions. Maybe you could come up with a few more of them, and we'll continue part two next week.
And the commercial that brought that to you live today is from SCORE, score.org. Go on to the webpage. There's some great learning. You talk about learning, I'm talking about on-demand webinars, seminars, a great library. You want to learn small business, score.org.
Thank you, guys. Thanks to Larkin Conley, Rich Logis, and Mark Andel, our engineer Henry Chaplinsky. I'm Michael Blihosh. Please do spread the word about all of our efforts here on American Workers Radio. We will have today's broadcast up for the rebroadcast link in about an hour or so. Until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, when we do part two of What Can We Do to Improve Education in America, I wish all of you the very best. Stay warm.
Have a good week, guys. I do owe you all a call. We're on our fourth snowstorm in a week. Bear with me.